Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast. We're back after a hard day on the cobbles in Paris-Roubaix, doing all the five-star sectors. You'll see that video probably in a couple of weeks. Back in the Flandrian Hotel for our last evening. It's been a big week in Flanders. We've been all about the traps. We went into Paris. Oh, not Paris. Saw signs to Paris. We marched on Paris. No, we went to France today. And now we're back before we go home in our separate ways tomorrow. We're pretty cooked. And this episode of the weekly show, which is back, has recaps of some of the Benji's local races, my local races this week. Decathlon still being good. Previews of Catalunya, where Poggi has his first big stage race this year. Harald Becker, Brugge de Panach, and Wevelhem as well. Armstrong banning hugs. He's doing some banning, some suspending of his own. Richard Pluger with the AIGCP. Lefebvre's unprecedented fine and this random salary cap thing that got penciled in. But yeah, how are you going, Benji? You blanketed up. You had cramps yesterday, which you managed to hide pretty well in the live. How are you holding up?
Well, I was suffering yesterday. I've had quite a bit of hours on the bike this week, which in hindsight is good. I've done things that I wasn't planning to do this week. So in hindsight, I'm happy with whatever we did. We explored Flanders, we explored Roubaix. We'll talk about it a bit towards the end of the podcast. But first of all, I swear at the start of this week that in my calendar it said no weekly show. How did that happen?
Yeah, well, we're here and there's like the Flandrian Hotel is like a scholarship program for young athletes to come and train and stay a while in Flanders, go to the races, etc. And Will, one of the scholarship guys, I'm cooked, as you can tell, I'm fucked, right?
Me too.
And this guy sits at the end of the table, he's looking at me now, and he says, the fucker, he says, what's happening in the weekly show? What's going on in the weekly show? I was like, hey, we missed 1 week, like, we missed 1 week. He's like, what's happening in the weekly show? And so we've been guilt-tripped into doing it, but actually, I said, there's a fair bit of news, because, yeah, obviously, I've got to get up for a flight at 5:30 in the morning, and I've just rode around Roubaix today, but, he's right, we should keep it going, we got to keep on track, so he is correct, but, sometimes the bearer of bad news gets hit with a stick. So onto Nokere Course, which we saw in person on Wednesday, which was cool to see.
We saw in person. We saw it blitz by in like 3 seconds.
No, we saw the race. We saw the race in person, unplanned. Yep. Benji said that the race didn't cross our route. It did. So I'm calling everybody.
Wasn't the same as the Nokere Course route.
So you know what he said? We said, Benji, you checked the route. He said, yeah. Then we get there, and then there's a marshal signal giver. And he's there, and Luke also had major issues. We saw a clash of Flemish and Dutch cultures. Luke had major issues with the guy's placement of a barrier, so they got into it. It was kicking off. And then Benji said, Benji, didn't you check the route? He said, oh, no, I just checked the climbs. I just checked the climbs, didn't overlap. I was like, well, unfortunately for you, Jagre is a cobbled sector that's not a climb, and these guys do it. So
is the half hook, so is the other one.
So that wasn't very helpful. We got to see the race, which is good. I think we saw a crash in a corner. I don't know if Hayter crashed in that corner. He was at the back of the group. Maybe he had to unclip. But I'm Team Hayter this year. So Nokere Course, one of the most dangerous races on the calendar. A huge crash in the final. I did a recon of it the day before unintentionally. And I came through, 500 meters to go on a downhill. And I said, there's no way they do this. And turns out they do, and they had a big crash. Merlier times his sprint perfectly, and just he had so much time. I've never seen a sprint post up. That's got to be the longest sprint post up victory for a long, long time. He literally stopped pedaling with 5 full seconds to go.
He straight up gapped the others in the sprint, and like Jakobsen and Philipsen sprinting against each other. Looked like they were sprinting against each other for a victory, but no, 20 meters ahead is Merlier, who just shot away. So what a victory. That's 3 years in a row, Merlier, in Nokere Course, I think. So he keeps on winning there. It's also a cobble sprint, which Philipsen after the race said, sprinting on cobble is not my thing. Hey, me neither. So I guess we're on the same page there. Kopecky won the women's version of the race. She attacked earlier than Merlier, even though Merlier was a sprint, but might as well have been an attack at this point. Solo finisher. Kopecky also solo finisher earlier, also a victory. So, hey, Belgium keeps winning.
Well, and if you go to Tim Merlier's PCS, his top results, the first result is 3 times winning Dunlop Nokere Course, not a Tour de France stage. So I guess, yeah, it's a great race, but yeah, it's a dangerous one, that's for sure. And Ackerman should have been disqualified, in my opinion. His move was really bad,
yep.
And that crashed Ricciard. And then, but Ricciard is also always moving when he finishes a sprint lead out. He moves back through the middle when he could pull off. So it was a messy run in, but that's to be expected. Next day was GP Dinant, which is over the border. Obviously, Dinant is. From Dinant to Roubaix is the last 100 kilometers of Paris-Roubaix, and obviously GP Dinant is a cobbled race, but it's been raining a lot, really, really muddy. There's not as many cobbled sectors as Roubaix. There's only 12 finishing in Dinant. They do a loop, 199 Ks, but they really jam them in together. They're within about 60 Ks after 120 Ks into the race, 12 sectors, so you're hitting some pretty... A lot of them are different. Some of them are the same. Like Saint-Python rings a bell. But
the snake.
About the python, yeah. but the sort of takeaway from this race was how muddy it was, Benji, and how it ended up not being a farce, but basically Stephen Kung pinballing the chase, going down, was really what defined how this race was won.
Exactly, and that brings us to the days before where Lotto brought out and used that the news that De Lee would be riding GP Dinant and Reden de Kokseide instead of MSR to recover from his crash in Le Saman. I was like, that sounds like a weird theory because those two races are dangerous compared to MSR. So, hey, he rode both and he crashed in this race, GP Dinant. He was in that group of Kung that hit the ground. So, the breakaway one, like you said, Yannick Steimle taking a victory for Q36.5, I think their first victory of the year ahead of a man, mystery man that Patrick is about to find out because my page isn't loading.
Cyril Dessal from Bingo.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it was three Belgians, 2-3-4, and Steimle. Q365 haven't really... In the Swiss team stakes, pro team stakes, Tudor have clearly outclassed them so far. This is their first win of the year. It's probably it's their biggest win ever, I would say. I would put this race above Almeria last year. And the team is only about 18 months old.
Wait. So, Glassenberg is South African.
Yeah. Doug Wright is South African.
Q36.5
Swiss
is a Swiss company.
Yeah, but Glencore is Swiss.
Oh, okay. This is getting difficult to keep track of why a certain team is a certain nation in my head. But hey,
even Glassberg was he's a South African. But yeah, he made all his money as the CEO of Glencore, a Swiss commodities trading company. I don't know if he has citizenship there, but he certainly sort of probably resides there when he's has businesses there. So, and it's a good place to set up a cycling team as well. So, I don't know whether is that team a continuation of Quebecca?
Not really.
So for me, it's a new structure.
Yeah, it's a new structure, and I also don't feel like it has the same identity baked
in.
No,
definitely not.
Because when you look at the team, I'm not feeling the MTN Quebec vibes.
No.
And also, when it comes to the team itself, I'm still wondering if they're going to keep on riding on Scots or whether Pinarello will be their bikes in the future. Because Glencore, he now owns Pinarello as well. So that's going to be curious. But anyway, Breden de Kokseide, next up on the menu. Belgian ChatGPT race, just like Nokere-Koersen. And I will say, after like a week of doing loads of stuff, all these races... like come hand in hand for me. I'm like, which race was the one where that rider did that thing? Lily was attacking with 100K to go in echelons. He was in second echelon. He was like, I see a front first echelon ahead of me that I missed. Let me just attack from the second echelon to the first echelon like crazy and bridge that like he was the strongest rider in the race. And then in the final, he was leading out Tamino, who ended up crashing. Groenewegen was sprinting there, looked very strong with about 500 meters to go, with about 400 meters to go, with 200 meters to go. And then out of his wheel, the draft merchant of Arkea, he rises up and it's Luca Mozzato. He's winning. He's coming out of the draft, which is shocking.
Also because they made him not just be the last man to lead out the other day in Le Samar.
Yep.
They had him second last. They had Mozzato, maybe Capio.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jente Biermans. beer man.
You're drinking beer, so.
No, I wouldn't say Flandrian. Let's call it 0% beer.
Yeah.
It's controversial.
That's true.
He gets his opportunity here and he wins. And also such a strange race, but also a really interesting race. We watched the finish here. It's like Gent Wevelgem has the Kemmelbergs much closer to the finish.
Yeah.
And De Mura, which is like a flat, it's actually below sea level and completely exposed to the wind. So if there's any wind, and there usually is, because we're really in the northwest of Flanders here and on Coxeter or Bredene. So, and De Mura is what? It connects Ypres and that hilly area with the coast.
Exactly.
And so you have to go through there. And Gent Wevelgem has that flat area before the climb, and the climb's closer to the finish. This race is the opposite. They do the Kemmelberg twice, one Belvedere side, one Oswer side, but it's like 100k from the finish. And then they went to that crosswind area, which you said, Benji. So a really difficult race, it looked like, because of the wind conditions and also crazy headwind sprint. We've got to say the tactics of DSM were really strange. They basically had Patrick Eddy, who's a good rider. He's been coming up progressively as a classics rider. I think I don't know if he's from Bendigo or Ballarat. I know he's from Victoria. He always does long rides in, I think it's Bendigo.
He's from Australia.
I mean, yeah, Tom Bonin's from Liège.
Where did that come from?
It's all the same, huh? And the... And
you're in the Flandre Hotel, you're saying that as all the same?
And he didn't relay with Lampaert, Patrick Eddy. You got Lampaert?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, not the best sprinter in terms of a classics guy, not the best sprinter. And then you have Patrick Eddy, who probably has to do, he's just got to give him a pull, 20% of the work, 25%, and Lampaert will probably pull all the way to the line. We've seen Lampaert, didn't he do it in Brugge de Panne? Where he had a sprinter behind and he towed two other guys with him who were relaying and they were quick guys.
But also, even if he pulls more than 20-25%, you've got Liepens and Degenkolb behind who are unlikely to beat the likes of Gerben Thijssen, Groenewegen, De Lee in a sprint on paper. Arvid De Kline also in the group. So, sorry, but Liepens is top 10 material for me here. Maybe a top 5 if he...
Top 10 is like, you just expected case. And Gerben Thijssen won this race last year.
Yep.
And Ackermann, all those sort of guys, Tamino was fourth last year. No way. Leipzig is not even a top 5 favorite for this finish.
Correct.
And so for Eddy not to pull is completely insane. It's a dot pro. There's points on offer.
Yep.
I don't know if it was the team car because he did pull through once and then it looked like the team car told him not to. Crazy stuff. It comes back for a sprint. Mosada wins, but just very, very odd stuff indeed. The last note is just two French races. They're 1-1s, and we haven't been able to catch up with them, but it's just a continuation of a theme, which is Decathlon keep winning. They look like they should run away with the French Cup this year. Paul Lepera, who's another of these young guys, is now winning, not just getting good results, but you've got Bastien Tronchon, who's the other one? Gautera.
Prodhomme.
Prodhomme. He's not so young, but he's...
Baudin,
and now Paul Lepera winning ahead of Alexis Renault.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Nard in a solo today, and he's 23 years old.
And that's two wins in a row, like Cholet plus Classique Loire Atlantique. But also next to that, he had a top 10 at Laguiglia, a top 10 at Vendrome Classic. Like, all those things together mean that he's continuously performing, and I wonder when that step up above those 1.1s will come in. Because, like, top 10s at 1.pro, wins at 1.1, at some point he might be competing for 1.pro races when it comes to victories, is how I'm looking at it. But we're speaking about the rider, but we gotta repeat, that jersey, they ain't cooking, because in MSR there was a moment where I thought an Israel rider had a puncture, and I looked back, and it was an Asher Desaire rider. Like, sorry, but They are so goddamn similar. Remind me of the fact that when SDWorks had their color scheme 2 years ago that was so present in the women's peloton, the UCI went out of their way to punish a small continental team, the Andy Schleck team, to kill their jersey, to tell them to change their jersey. And then they hosted like a limited sale of all the stock they had and so forth. And now this year they completely forgot this rule existed because every team looks the same in men's cycling now.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at the... we already said before this even happened, why are the UCI not making sure that people can see which team is which? That seems like a pretty important thing. And I understand that Decathlon, they've just done a corporate rebrand. Like 5 days ago, they did a corporate rebrand. I'm looking on their Instagram. This is like the corporation, Decathlon. And they've got... It doesn't necessarily match totally with the kit. The rebrand is almost a different color to that color that I'm seeing. So it's obviously because they've done that rebrand, the main sponsor, and I get it, they're paying all the money for the team, but I don't see why that rebrand, even if they have to do something different with the kit, why it has to now match the Israel kit. They could have done something different to still keep Decathlon happy, that would still be in keeping with what the jersey was, which I thought was quite nice. I know they got rid of the brown shorts, but very, very strange. Very, very difficult to make out. So hopefully next year there might be better guidelines or enforced guidelines on kits not exactly matching.
Hopefully.
But, yeah. Binda.
So Trofeo Binda also today, Women's World Tour race. And I got to be honest, I didn't see the final yet. I read what happened because we just arrived here at the hotel and we were like, let's jump into a weekly show. But the winner is Elisa Balsamo, head of Lotto Kopecky and Puk Pieterse. Pieterse once again performing in a World Tour race, so I'm happy to see that. But when I look at these results, I'm like, okay, so Balsamo was in group one, Shirin Van Androoy was just off the back. Van Androoy must have controlled the hell out of that group, or other teams must have controlled it for Balsamo, because otherwise I'm shocked that this group stayed together.
Yeah, I mean,
unless Royster kept it together for Kopecky against Balsamo.
No way with Kopecky's current sprint, they would surely think she's the favorite to beat even Balsamo. I know Balsamo hasn't looked that good this year, but another big win for her. Trek are looking very, very good this season, and they take away another victory from SDWorks.
Yep.
With Kopecky on the start list, it wasn't like SDWorks didn't send anybody. They sent the big gun, so... congrats to Little Trek, especially a race that's very important to them, probably the biggest Italian one-day race on their calendar, and a race that's been going on for a long time. And it's good this also... Yeah, there's no women's San Remo, but Binder sort of... It's done the hard yards for many years, filling that place on the Sunday after San Remo, giving the women a major Italian one-day race. That's the racing this week. Previews now. The big race this week is Volta a Catalunya. It has, for the first time turning up, Catalunya will be very, very happy. Tadej Pogačar, two-time Tour de France champion and obviously winning a whole load of other things along the way. He brings a stacked team. Almeida, Sivakov, Groschartner, Vine, Novak, Soler. This is basically their Giro team, except you take out Almeida and put in Micah for their Giro team, and maybe not Sivakov. But that's a crazy team for a one-week race of this caliber, like with this parkour. Sepkus, Oeterbroek's the two guys for Visma Lisa bike. So we'll see if one-week Kus can replicate what GC Kus did last year in 3 weeks. They also have Mr. Lemon. See what he can do. No Remco, but there is Mikel Landa. So he's leading for Sudal Quickstep. Probably, I would say, Spain's best hope of a result here. As well as Geraint Thomas, Ethan Hayter, Egan Bernal. Well, Egan Bernal, is he doing like, can I race every World Tour race challenge this year? What's going on?
Maybe every Grand Tour as well afterwards. But next to those teams, I'm looking at Bahrain. Can they surprise with like a Pools or a Caruso, stuff like that? But Lenny Martinez, also curious how close he can get. But I've got a feeling that it's going to be as close as he was in Gran Camino, for example, which he podiumed that race, if I recall. He got third on GC.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't expect him to necessarily get third in GC here, but I'd love to see him in the top 10, close to top 5 maybe, stuff like that. Give him some more GC results going into the future. Bora has a pretty stacked team, to be honest. Vlasov, Higita, and that's kind of where it ends.
That seems useless.
That's kind of where it ends. The stacked team was 2 riders and support.
Well, and Vlasov was the rumor came from Chiro. Chiro, I think he had a few swings and misses.
Yep.
On Twitter, the Italian journalist with transfer rumors. But this one makes sense. He said Vlasov to Astana was rumored, and then it came out that someone close to Vlasov said that he was going to extend with Bora. But anyway, he's leading them at Catalunya. He looked good in Paris-Nice on the last weekend, obviously. Maxim van Gils, I'm keen to see how he goes. No Lennart van Eidveld, though, on the star list. Somewhat surprising, because he was good here last year for Lotto Destiny.
I think there was an article on HLN that said he had a knee injury.
Okay.
Something with a swelling around his knee is what I read, so...
All right. So, but I think he was planning to do it. Simon Yates, he's had about a month and a half off after winning a Lula Tour, which was probably his second biggest race of the year. And he comes here. I'm not sure what shape he'll be in. Maybe he's been at altitude, but I'm keen to see how he goes. Bahrain, Caruso, Pools, Haig. But really, everyone's going to be looking at Tadej Pogačar and that team. Like, there's just no one else that really...
He should clean this up.
He really should. There's no Evenepoel, no Roglic, no Vingegaard. There's Enric Mas, there's Kuss, but especially when you look at the parcours, for example, San Feliu de Guijols, the opening stage, I think Roglic won last year.
Yep.
Well, if Roglic can win it in an uphill sprint, Pogačar can win it.
Yep.
Stage 2 is a Uni Puerto up Valter, which is about a 30-minute climb. Good climb for him, I would say. Stage 3 to Portanay. It is 3 long climbs. And this goes past, not my house, but I'd probably go down to La Seu to go check out the race. This crosses from east to west, Catalunya out to Portanay, which is quite north of there. There's not much going on. These roads are really like to Porto Canto. They're nice roads, but it's really sparse. It's a high mountain stage, but those climbs are not that long, and they're not like to Tourmalet. And Portanay's, I guess it's long to 2,000 meters. That's the real danger stage, if there is any danger stage for Pogačar. Then there's a couple of Caden Grove-style sprints. I think he's out of the race, maybe with an injury. We haven't really spoken about the sprinters. There is a 6.5K, 6% climb on stage 5, not too far from the finish. Stage 6, I think, I don't know if Sepkus literally designed this stage. But he did a tweet saying his ideal Catalunya stage, and then the organizers actually made it. It's a lap around Berga with like 4,000 meters climbing with loads of climbs, finishing up Querolt, which is 6K, 7% up to, I think there's a chapel up there. And it still looks like a really good Pogačar stage.
I'll be honest, looking at this stage, I don't care if Sepkus designed it or not, but if he did, then he needs to design more stages, because this is a banger of a stage. It's kind of a raid stage where there's opportunities on the third last climb. Basically, if you look at a parkour, 2 leading climbs for a breakaway to form. Then in the middle of the stage, a proper climb, 14.6 kilometers at 7%, but the last 5.5 kilometers are 11%.
Yeah.
So
wow. That's
a launching pad. And then you've got 2 more climbs afterwards where, I don't know, maybe in the descent towards it, the satellite rider could be helpful, stuff like that. So I'm getting the vibes here, and if I was an organizer, I'd be like, Sepkus, design my entire Grand Tour.
Yeah, and it's maybe that's right, but I mean, good luck someone trying to do anything if UAE can control it with that team. You've got Sivakov and Vine looking at you and Groschartner. But there was, in terms of weather, there was a big snow dump last week around Catalunya, and especially around where they're going up to, because they're going up to about over 1,700 meters at least 3 times in this race. About a meter of snow up there, just about, in a weekend. But the weather this week looks really, really good, so the roads should be all okay, like over 15 degrees. Stage 7 is at the Montjuic circuit in Barcelona, which you should know, where Remco beat Roglic last year. And this is the thing, like, say Poggy, it's not going to happen, most likely. But say he has an issue or something on stage 3, or there is the raid, you say, on stage 6. If Sepkus is 30 seconds ahead of him on GC or 20 seconds, he can just drop everybody on that Montjuic circuit.
Yep.
and Solo.
Pogacar wins this race, whatever happens.
He should.
Well, not sure about whatever happens, but 99% of the time, Pogacar wins this race. And that's for me, Catalunya. Like,
but is this the hardest one-week race he's ever done, parkour-wise? It's one of the hardest one-week races of the year. When you look at the parkour, it obviously depends how they race it.
The competition is like, sorry, but Thomas and Bernal in a one-week race, I don't see even close to Pogacar, so he should be cleaning this. Like
Simon Yates.
This is Andalusia last year for me.
No, this is harder.
The parkour's harder, but the star list isn't.
Simon Yates.
Simon Yates isn't going to clean up Pogacar, my friend. No.
Not with the team they've sent.
Not having it. Whatever team they sent.
Maybe Van Aertvelt if he'd been here. But yeah, Pogacar's going to be the heavy favorite. Should win pretty easily. In terms of sprinters, there's Coquard. And Caden Groves is no longer on the start list. He won at least one stage last year. Ethan Hayter, really, this has got to be it.
Yeah.
There's a couple of stages here which are absolutely perfect for him, notwithstanding stage one where, okay, it's uphill, so yeah, Poggy's in with a decent chance. But, I mean, stage four and stage five in particular, he's got to be contesting those stages for the win. So I guess that's why also he's here. So it's a good race selection for him, but Ineos will be hoping to see something. Brugge de Panne starts in Bruges, obviously also can be affected by crosswinds. Actually quite a good race.
It's exactly the same you mentioned after already. And Tuevelgem has the Mooren before that climbing segment. Brugge de Panne,
they just do laps of it.
Yeah, they just do laps of the moon.
There's no climbs. They just do laps, hoping that the wind will pick up and the race will split.
I think that Brugge de Panne should be an uncapped race where they do laps until the wind has effect.
No, until the one rider is solo. It can't finish in a sprint. So if there's still two people, it has to be solo. Yeah,
and everybody that is not in the front group gets eliminated. Yeah. It's basically the Mooren elimination race.
What's that on the track?
Elimination race.
Okay, yeah. Makes sense. But yeah, if the wind is right, it can be a really good race. Merlier Philipsen are on the start list. They both have been should be good in this sort of race. They're great in the crosswinds. Tersen as well. Fantastic. Bauhaus has been looking really good. So it's a race where, because it's so flat, that you can see the sprinters actually attacking and being aggressive, trying to create echelons. So I'll really be trying to watch that race. Although I think it might be on the same day as Catalunya's banger stage, the big mountain one. But I can't wait to see Philipsen and Merlier go head-to-head once again. Because if Merlier wins this in a sprint ahead of Philipsen, and there's no excuse, I don't like cobbled uphill sprints, then I think some people will be saying, who's the best sprinter in the world? Yep. I guess Philipsen did just win San Remo yesterday, so Brugge de Panne, San Remo.
Yes, we'll have to wait for the award show at the end of the year, but women's race is also about the best sprinter. We've got Charlotte de Cole versus Wiebes versus Balsamo versus a lot of good riders in this race. So I'll look forward to that one as well. Last year, that was arguably the best women's race of the year for me.
Okay, fair enough.
But for Georgie winning, right?
Oh, I can't remember.
With Jastrap in that group?
Yeah, DSM.
Wiebes crashing everyone, or was it Hanwevelgem? When she went off the side, did a bit of a...
She didn't get disqualified. She didn't get... Like, Masiuk did the same thing, and she didn't get... And hers was really bad, too.
Yeah. She crashed Kopecky.
Yeah. E3 Harelbeck is on Friday. That's probably the... I don't know if it's bigger than Gent-Wevelgem, but they're the two biggest one-day races of the week on Friday and Sunday. E3 on Friday is like the watered-down version of the Tour of Flanders, 200Ks rather than 260. And as well, they do the Paterberg before the Clermont. Benji has got some Flemish intel that the Paterberg is all good, despite the work still being done when we were there on Thursday, and that it should be all good for Friday. So if the source of that is Benji, and all complaints to him if that's not true, but I think it's pretty safe to say they should have it fixed up for... Well, maybe the second biggest race or in the region.
And if they don't, it's a mountain bike descent race, so might be entertaining.
The start list, Van der Poel against Wout van Aert for Alpecin and Visma Lisa bike, no Philipsen, so it really is all Van der Poel time. Alaphilippe for Quickstep as well as Asgreen. Visma nearly did it. Visma Lisa bike also bring Laporte, Benoit, Jorgensen, Affini, Tratnik, Van Baarle, so not a shabby team. one would say. Kung is there with no pithy. Pedersen also there with Sturver. Both looked very, very good in Milan Sanremo, but no Schoens. Narváez, I dare say, will be Ineos' best rider, although Tarling is there. Lascano, Velens, but no Pagacha for UAE. Arno Dali is here. Maybe I should have said he's the third favorite for Lotto Destiny. If he crashes here, I don't think he should say this is a shit race. But and Michael Matthews, he did not do opening weekend. I said that was a strange decision. That was vindicated by the team yesterday, coming second in Sanremo. He also is probably going to be top fiving this race, given the shape he showed yesterday. So an interesting race, Benji, as a warm-up to Flanders. Really?
You expect Matthews to top five this race?
Why not?
I don't know why. I always felt like he's the guy that ends up in the end of the top 10 because he wins a sprint in group 2 or 3.
Yeah.
Or he gets second in the sprint in group 2
Maybe
or 3.
Maybe I'm overrating how good he is in the cobbles. Maybe he's better in the Italian-style races. He's come sixth in the Tour of Flanders before. He's come fourth in Liège. That's strange. maybe you're right. I think this suits him better than the Tour of Flanders, though. I think it's better.
Amstel is what I'm waiting for him.
Yep. Yeah. And they need points out of him. So I think that he might even be going for a top five.
But we all know going into this race that it's always about the time better opening it up. So put your TV on early because shit will hit the fan in that race.
Steinberg with about 80Ks to go is, that's where it's opened up for many, many years. And I can't wait to see, does Van der Poel with this team not look, his team doesn't look that good to me, really. Like, if I'm honest, Søren Kralj's form is questionable.
Yeah. But yesterday you did say before the Poggio, and suddenly Alpecin was back with 17 riders together with Van der Poel and Philipsen.
Yeah, but Søren Kralj finished.
You're right. And he wasn't there on the Poggio this year.
He wasn't there. Normally he is. And he's his second best rider tomorrow on Friday at E3. So we'll see how they... But Van der Poel looks in such good shape, he can just win anyway with the mullet. Binny also, we're hoping for a good result. But then on the Sunday, you have Gent Wevelgem, which is a very, very different classic to E3 in the Tour of Flanders. Gent Wevelgem is really the main World Tour race, or the biggest World Tour race in West Flanders. Is it West Flanders or it's not? Because it's below
It's Kent. Not in West Flanders.
But it is to the west, like. It's on the border
East
with
Flanders.
France. Yeah, but it...
Flanders is not in the east of Flanders. That's where people get wrong.
But Ypres is in the west of Flanders.
Yes.
And they go through there.
Yes.
Okay.
But they go from Ghent to Ypres and they go back.
And they
so
start,
they just were like, let's
they,
hop in the Muren.
They start in Ypres.
Oh, yeah, they moved the start to Ypres. Well, it's getting difficult, man.
They start in Ypres, Menin Gate, which I think is quite a nice start, actually. It's very iconic. The first 100Ks of 140Ks of flat, this is a very long race, 252Ks.
Why is this called Gent Wevelgem, eh? Like,
I don't know.
It's Ypres Wevelgem.
Yeah, but why do they call...
Milan Sanremo. It's Pavia Sanremo.
Yeah, there's a lot of races like that. I mean...
RVV. Well, that stays the same.
Paris-Roubaix, don't start in Paris.
Compiègne-Roubaix.
Yeah. They do three times the Kemmelberg. They do the Belvedere side twice, and the last side is the Oswer side, which is quite difficult. But that's still 40Ks or so from the finish. Last year, Wout van Aert went solo, well, not solo. He went with Laporte, and then much to the ire of Sporza, gave the win to Christophe Laporte. And we'll see what happens this year. I don't think van Aert is doing it again. He's doing Dwarsdorf Vlaanderen. It's going to be Laporte, it looks like, on the provisional site list for Visma. Van der Poel is doing it, though, with Philipsen.
Yep.
So how, I mean, that is the best team. You've got the best versatile, like, classic sprinter.
Yep.
Who just won Sanremo. And you have the best classics rider in the world. So.
And also, with a lot of other teams, we'd be like, oh, can they play together? They've proven every single time, also at MSR, that they've got the dynamic in the team that they can deliver.
Yeah. So really...
Can I just point out that the guy in the audience that wanted us to do a weekly show just ran out?
Oh, he's young. Let him be. He's probably got to clean your bike, Benji.
Oops.
Yeah, so Morris also here. He was in a good position last year. Tim Merlier might win the race if they don't get rid of him, but I dare say they will. He also looked quite sharp, I thought, for Sudal Quickstep. But really, I'm looking at Van der Poel, Philipsen, and it's going to be very, very difficult to beat them.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's all the previews. Now we're getting into some of the news, and the most topical one is, I've seen this so many times in basketball, in NFL, in cricket, like Ian Chappell sort of guys saying, the competitors are too friendly now. And Armstrong said, he went on a podcast, not his own, and said, he can't believe how the guys are all hugging each other at the finish line, like it virtually makes him sick. And
it virtually makes him sick. Sorry, but yeah. That's a stretch.
And then yesterday there was Michael Matthews, Jasper Phillips, and Pegatch all had a big group hug at the end of San Remo. So, like, where do you stand on Armstrong's statement?
Where do I stand on that statement? Yeah. I think it's a stupid ass statement. Like, sorry, but are you going to tell me that every team should tell their riders you can't be friends with anyone on competitive teams just in case they might be competitors in a certain race against you? Yes, there's rivalries in this sport, but those are built on actual rivalries and not just because they are the competitor. There's always more to it. Sorry, but I don't necessarily see Pogacar, Matthews, and Philipson as the one-on-one rivalries like that. Yes, we see Pogacar and Vingegaard respect each other after the races. Are they having a coffee with each other every weekday? No, they're not. Like,
yeah, but don't you think there's also a difference there? I don't think Vingegaard thinks it's necessary to go high five each other or like,
well,
after every mountain stage.
Every single mountain stage, Jonas is literally having his phone in the air looking for the GPS to call his wife.
That's what I mean. He's like, he's just sort of in his own world.
Yeah, but I don't hate it that riders are mature enough to see the difference between a race and real life.
The race is real life. There's money on the line.
Yeah, that. No, it isn't all about the money. It's also about reputation. It's also about your reputation in the peloton. If you're Pogacar and you're like, this Vingegaard guy, congratulations, fuck that. Not giving him a hug, not giving him a hand.
Like when he gave he gave Van Baarle a nice hug after Tour of Flanders 2022, I think.
Half of the peloton will start disrespecting you or disliking you if you're an asshole in the peloton. So there's also peloton dynamics involved there. Like, they also need to keep relative allies in certain races.
Yeah, but I'm not saying, no, but that's a different question. Like, not being a dick in the peloton, chopping somebody. I think it would annoy riders more if you're an asshole in the bunch, chopping everybody, being a nervous wreck, doing stupid shit, and then after the race, you're like all buddy-buddy. If I was a rider, that would piss me off a hell of a lot more than a guy who was really polite, friendly in the bunch, let you through if it didn't matter, and then after the race, he just went straight to his bus. I mean, I know which rider I would prefer.
Yeah, for sure, but why not both?
Yeah, of course, in an ideal world. I mean, I think
I like rivalries just as much as you do, but I want there to be an actual narrative to it. I don't want there to be a rivalry just because, okay, they're against each other in this race, so now they can't hug each other anymore. That sounds fucking stupid.
Yeah, I mean, they can do what they want. I don't mind Armstrong saying it. I can get behind it a little bit. Like, I sometimes think it could be a little bit performative. But then maybe it's just good sportsmanship. I dare say it is. I think it's great to see that, guys can come third or they're happy with it.
We're also in the era of social media, and riders also know that if they're respectful to their competitors after the finish line, they're hanging it out and so forth, it's got to be all over the internet and they're going to get good promotion from it. So that's also involved. And that good promotion is not just good for them, but also for their team, for their sponsors, stuff like that. And yes, Carlos Barreiro and Rui Costa fighting each other with a wheel gets them on the news as well, but I'm not sure the sponsors are very happy with that.
Which photo do you remember more from last year? Will you remember more? The two guys hugging?
Or the bench in MSR?
You got it. The bench of Van Aert, Ganna, or what race was it? Was it MSI? Van Aert, Ganna, and Van Der Poel, where they put them on a couch. I swear to God, this thing was too wide. You put like two Italian grandmothers on, and they got three guys 190 centimeters next to each other. That photo was so good. Apparently, though, it wasn't even awkward. Like, they were just chatting, and they just got captured at the wrong time. But yeah, I mean, it's a classic sort of classic take that comes out from ex-athletes that it ain't the same as back in my day, and we used to race.
It was the same back in his day. He was hugging it out with Ulrich on the bike.
Was he?
Yes, I've seen multiple pictures of it this week on Twitter.
Fair enough. Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
unless it was like deep fake pictures, AI pictures, I doubt it.
let him fire some takes off. Come on. Richard Plugger steps down from the AIGC president's position. This is probably the least surprising news we've got this week, because it's, yeah, I'll say it from my perspective, obviously, that it's a pretty thankless job.
Yep.
I'm not sure you're going to change your, it'll change your life doing it for the better, representing the professional cycling teams. And he came under a lot of criticism from the various people, like even Cedric Vasseur, when the Alterbrooks saga was happening in November. Vasseur was on Twitter telling him to resign, and
he did.
And it looks like
Vasseur won.
Plugger gave out a statement. I'll read it out a bit more fully in a second, but gave a statement to the effect of, no problem, Cedric. Yeah, I'm resigning. Good luck to you all. I'm going to focus on my own team now. Like, good luck. But you're, but yeah, he actually said, after serving as president of the AIGCP for 3 years and vice president before that, I feel it's time to hand over the gavel. I therefore did not stand for re-election. I think it's healthy that our gavel changes regularly. By doing so, we professional teams share together the responsibility and much work involved in the role in the AIGCP.
For me, there's two sides to the story. I fully agree that it's a thankless job and you're more likely to have criticism than you're going to have people be happy with what you're doing. On the other side, this resignation also feels like I'm stepping out because I'm about to get stepped out anyway. Because everybody, well, not everybody, but I'd say more than half of the team.
There was an open letter, no?
Yeah, there was an open letter to get him to
from like 10 teams
to stop being in that role. So I'd say it's like, for example, that I don't know. I'm a bus driver. I start insulting fellow bus drivers, and then the bus drivers want me to. This metaphor sucks. And then the bus drivers want me gone. So I quit.
Why is the bus driver? Yeah, I get it. It's and you know, there's a few things like it definitely comes with a higher level of responsibility for what you say in terms of if you're head of the AIGCP, then if you're critical of another team, it's like, well, which hat are you wearing? Obviously,
yeah.
You know, it's that bit's difficult, but
that's why I believe that all these bloody organizations should have external people leading it.
It is crazy that the head of the AIGCP is a
team manager.
A team manager.
That
yeah.
makes no sense in my head.
So
I think it should be Luke.
It should probably be someone independent who's elected by, but then it's like, okay, then you got to pay that person. You got to get the right CEO, right? The right person to do it. Got to pay them 150 grand, 125 grand for that job. If it's going to be the right person, maybe it's a part-time job. I don't know. But he steps down. Richard Plugger maybe.
Well, it has to be a part-time job if a team manager can do it.
Exactly.
It'll take up your entire week.
By definition. But it's maybe he wants to focus on other things. Maybe the one cycling project is going to kick off in the next 6 months.
Yeah.
And so it's not possible to wear those two hats if some teams are in that and some teams are not.
Three hats.
Yeah. Speaking of team managers, Patrick Lefebvre received a fine. I was quite surprised to see this, but I wasn't dissatisfied either, that he received a fine for his comments. Well, the media release said comments disparaging towards women. The UCI says the fine will be suspended if he issues a public statement of apology and does not commit another breach. And this is obviously in relation to his comments regarding Marion Roos earlier in an, was it a sports interview, Benji, or Belgian news?
In Humor.
Okay.
Magazine.
Humor magazine, yeah. With Jose de Caua.
Yes. But I will say, it shocks me that they don't specifically state what statement of Lefebvre led to this. It's very logical that it's that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But why would they not express specifically what it is? Because now they're like, disparaging towards women. Like, he said a few things that is disparaging towards women. It's his trademark sometimes.
Yeah, it doesn't have a date attached to it. It just says it's a breach of the articles 5 and 6 of the Code of Ethics. And as a person subject to the UCI regulations, because he's a license holder, being a team manager, he's subject to those. And they've asked him basically to apologize, or he's going to cop a, his wallet will be 20,000 Swiss francs lighter. So I don't know how stubborn Lefebvre is, but maybe not 20 grand stubborn. So,
but
yeah,
I will say there's three other things in this, and I feel like the UCI media, they brought this out as like, we've resolved 4 cases, we've rendered decisions in 4 cases. I feel like not putting any in the headline hides all of them, because I'm going through this. I'm like, president of the Ukraine Cycling Federation Bashenko has been fined for the use of insulting language directed at incumbent officials within the national federation as well as officials of the UCI, stuff like that. Then the next one, we've got the whole thing about Afghanistan, where cyclists, there was a takeover by the Taliban or something, and then cyclists didn't get the humanitarian aid, and now they found no evidence that there were breaches of the Ethics Commission. I feel like every single one of these topics was like a major issue 2 years ago, and they're hiding it in this small UCI media result.
It is very strange to release all these things in one go, but I guess the UCI Ethics Commission, they couldn't move themselves to maybe meet a little bit more regularly on an ad hoc basis. So they obviously met and dealt with these 4 cases.
Over the last 2 years, and they were like...
Yeah, in one go. Lefebvre's one's obviously recent news,
yep.
But do you reckon he'll apologize? Taking bets.
Publicly? He needs to do it publicly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, do it publicly, yeah.
Ooh. How public? What is a public... Yeah. An article in Humor?
No, on his Twitter, on Instagram, on the Quickstep website.
I would respect it if he does.
If I was Quickstep, I wouldn't let him do it on the website. He should do it on his own.
He should. I respect it if he does. He should.
I think he will not do it.
Principles.
Because it is unusual. I've not seen a fine like this before.
Will he go to cuss for it?
No.
That would be lame.
That will cost you more. It's not. But depends. Depends. Maybe he will. I don't really know the guy.
Anyway, time to talk about money. The UCI, they did a lot of stuff this week.
All these big news is hidden in articles. And like when you look at when the UCI Media Twitter account tweets it out, and then you see the byline on the tweet, it has sometimes nothing to do with the big news in there, which was like first PCC, Professional Cycling Council meeting, including stakeholders of women's professional road cycling, took place in Montreux, in Switzerland. But the big news, which that was like put up as the big news, which is great. Yep. But the big news was salary cap
on the financial front and an extension to the reform of the organization of professional road cycling in 2018. The principle, of implementing a budget cap for teams was approved. So a salary cap.
The principle of implementing a salary. Yeah.
What does that mean?
Like that they should do it. And now for the next 18 months, they'll look at how they should do it. A working group. So and that's literally what it says.
Yeah.
A working group will be set up rapidly. So they'll get some cap experts in. US fans will know what that means, obviously, because their sports are subject to salary caps. Rapidly to present measures to the UCI Management Committee with a view to their application from the next renewal of teams. UCI Women's World Tour and UCI World Tour licenses, i.e. for the next cycle. So for the next cycle, 26, 27, 28, there could be a salary cap. Now, the idea that the CPA would agree to a salary cap is very surprising to me in a team, in a sport where there's supposed to be, you know, limited money or not unlimited money, that they would just agree to a salary cap. Surprising, because it should. I mean, unless they make it like baseball where it's just, yeah, there's a salary cap, but it's a really soft cap and basically the big teams just spend anyway. And then the UAE can still have, they can have a massive budget and pay a luxury tax. I mean, they're going to have to go into all this stuff and enforcement of people. This is not like it's in the US or North America where they're all in a uniform legislation. These are you've got Australian registered teams and companies, you've got US, you've got Israel, like, and then how successful has the financial fair play rules even been in sports like football? City have won, yeah, I'm a United fan, but you know, City have won who knows how many trophies, and there's an ongoing investigation into like 115 breaches of those rules. And then you've got, especially with the golf money in there, with how do you even enforce it? Okay, so you can't give Pogacar or you can't give a superstar X money, but like, how do you enforce, how is the UCI going to enforce it if people then, you know, give them assets outside of the salary? I don't know.
Exactly. Like, in simple terms, in my head, a salary cap for a team, like a straight up budget cap without any other rules, would mean that, okay, I would pay a superstar X amount of money and all the domestiques would be on like 60K.
Yeah.
That's my strategy setting up that team. So it would have to be more than that, like you mentioned, but then you're saying the right thing in there are riders that are being paid outside of the team itself by a specific sponsor in a certain way or a separate establishment or whatever that entity or whatever that's called. Like, how the hell is that going to be controlled?
Yeah, very, very difficult to enforce, kind of opening Pandora's box there. But I guess people avoiding the rules doesn't necessarily mean that the idea is wrong in principle, but I'm not sure I've seen many convincing arguments for a budget cap.
Yeah.
I guess you could have redistributions, because shouldn't UAE, if UAE are going to sign Sivakov and exceed the cap, shouldn't they
have to
pay a cap hit?
A salary cap? I feel like cycling is still not at its potential finances, and a salary cap might stop it from financially innovating.
Well, I mean, I don't really know why, the motivation, what's the justification to play devil's advocate for the salary cap? It's that it's unfair for Kofidis, Antomache. The teams with smaller budgets that, but isn't a salary cap even more unfair for the French teams because they have to pay a higher proportion of the salary in taxes compared to a UAE or a Swiss registered team? So a salary cap is going to actually hit them disproportionately. And as you said, what you just do is you pay the superstars the max and then you get the minimum guys, and then you'll probably still win the big races. So, but we'll see what they come up with. Maybe they design a really good system, but that was just snuck in there. And I don't know why the CPA hasn't come out against it, because I would not be agreeing to a salary cap in a sport where there is no asset redistribution from the owners to the players, like in the US, where when the salary cap negotiations, there's also negotiations of the collective bargaining agreement between the athletes union and the owners. And then, you know, there's a bit of a quid pro quo where, okay, you want this changes to the salary cap, or the salary cap changes, or these changes, we want a higher revenue split or of the revenues from the league. But that doesn't exist in cycling, so very, very surprising. That's all I've got, Benji.
Yeah.
We're cooked.
My head hurts, my nose hurts, my body hurts. It's time to stop the intelligent talking because I can't follow. So let's jump into a last minute story time. Why am I fucked?
Well, we had, riding the cobbles all week. We filmed a documentary this week. We've basically been based in the Flandrian Hotel, and then we've been going out and doing rides in Flanders mostly. And then we had a group ride even yesterday, San Remo Watch Along. And then we went out to Roubaix today, which was to the Coles, which was really, really good, filming some extra stuff. So it's something slightly different. It's definitely a big, it's definitely a lot more effort than sitting at home podcasting with each other, but it's hopefully it's worth it. So that will be coming out in maybe a week and a half. You'll probably see the fruits of that labor. But until then, hope you enjoyed the update of the weekly show. We won't be doing Catalunya Stage 1 tomorrow. Poggy will probably win the uphill sprint anyway, so you heard it here first. And we'll be back for the Voltaire finish on Stage 2 on Tuesday. Until then, ciao.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.